outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
So I had a great road trip with my brother-in-law.
You did? Where'd you go?
We flew out to Seattle. And
that doesn't sound like a road trip. We flew out to Seattle. Hold on.
Okay, so
rented a car and drove to Japan. Well, that does sound fascinating. Way to go, Kyle.
Oh, yeah. So I got a really good deal, found a really good deal on a car. I needed a new car because I'd sold mine. And found a great deal with a person that was able to develop a good connection with. Flew out to Seattle. And last minute, my brother-in-law was like, hey, do you mind if I come with you? And so he flew out with me, and we ended up having a great three-day road trip through Washington and Idaho, the Tetons, and it was one of those fun surprises that I would have never expected, and yet God, I was available, and God showed up, and it was such a cool experience.
So you did a bunch of sightseeing, huh? Takes you that long to drive back to Wyoming. You weren't hitting the road hard.
Well, we weren't. I mean, there's a lot of driving, but we definitely, I mean, we saw Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Spokane, Washington. We went through Idaho Falls because there's a beautiful mountain pass drive that follows the Snake River into Jackson and then spits you out in the Tetons. And so that was gorgeous. And it helped that we were doing it in an all-wheel drive rally car. So that was a lot of fun. It made those single lane mountain roads a very exciting and exhilarating experience.
So that's your ride now, huh? This rally car.
That is my ride.
Oh my gosh, you'll enjoy going to work more, I guess.
It is fun. Yeah, it's okay. All-wheel drive, so it helps a lot in the snow and stuff out here. So that's really nice.
That will help. And the wind. The wind, I
and mean, the wind.
Especially correct. Dangerous.
It's low profile. It's a car, so I can duck under the wind and I can slide over the ice.
Well, I got to be home all week and I wasn't supposed to be.
Was it a good surprise? How did you use your surprise week at home?
It worked well. I flew back Sunday night from Baltimore. I was going to be home one day and fly out Tuesday morning to go to Amarillo, Texas to follow up on some anti-racism training we've been doing out there with Bob and Arnita and the language of healing and all that good stuff. But, and Bob got the COVID, man. He got a breakthrough case. He and his wife, pretty sick.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, they had to blow off the training. They had some other people, the university or the college, couldn't make it on those 2 days we were supposed to be there. So it was a kind of a complication of things where they said, hey, probably good idea to call it off, which I was relieved because I had this 10 days in Virginia and Maryland, and I was coming back. And then I just had about a 10-day break before I'm headed off 10 days to Florida. So I thought 10 days home was a pretty good break between those two. And
yeah.
Then the Amarillo thing came up, so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm really cramming this thing in here, but willing to do it, and then it blew away. So, believe me, I've had plenty to do in the aftermath of one trip and trying to get started up on another one, and yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
It's interesting, though. Would you say, okay, I'm intrigued to find out what your thoughts are on this. Would you say that that was God's provision?
What, giving Bob COVID?
Well, not giving Bob COVID, but basically just having the details of the trip to where you crammed it in, you were willing to do it, but then it falls through. Like, what do you think God's role was in that?
I honestly don't know. I think the idea that God has this perfect will and is arranging all our circumstances to fit it, I'm not in that page. I was willing to go. I think we had grace for it. I was excited about it. I think it's the only healthy discussion about race I know of going on in the world. I'm hopeful there are others. But yeah. In the media, it always plays off two cliffs, the left cliff or the right cliff. And it just can't bring people together to have a intelligent conversation about racial diversity and the consequences of some of the racisms that existed in our culture without sending a whole group of dominant culture folks into a tizzy or some woke folks into another kind of tizzy. And so I was excited about going because I'm excited about that conversation they're having there. But that it gave me more space between these two trips and a chance to be home and rest. And after a grueling trip, but a great trip, I'm appreciating the time. But I think I would have experienced God's grace either way, in the going or in having some extra times. To me, just navigating, not trying to control all the circumstances coming at you, not thinking God necessarily does, but always knowing God has a way to navigate whatever's coming at me.
Okay. So what were some of the conversations or were there any themes of conversations that were taking place on your last trip?
No, it was all over the, map. Depends on who I was with. I started out in the Norfolk area of Virginia And we had some really wonderful, he loves me kind of conversations there, as well as they do want to do a kind of a day-long conversation about language of healing.
Nice.
How we could be more merciful in a broken world. And that was really fun to do. It was challenging, I think, to some in the room. It's kind of pushing them further than they've experienced it before, but very hungry, very willing, very open to taking all that in. And then from, I mean, I just, every moment of every day, from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed, was just packed with conversations. And I didn't pack that schedule. I didn't. You know how I do it. And yeah. We got a few things going on in the evening, but things just kept growing during the day. And just very blessed to know the people I know in the world, even people I just meet. I come away from this trip, one, incredibly excited about what God seems to be stirring in the world, how God is inviting people out of places of brokenness, or particularly a lot of, you know, former pastoral types who have thought their calling was in some kind of leadership thing, now really finding themselves in a different place to do the same kind of thing. How do I equip, encourage, help broken people into the life of Jesus if I'm not managing an institution? And some of them are very grateful no longer to be managing institutions for various reasons. Yeah. So yeah, all that was just wonderful. And I met some people who have been reading some of my stuff for a long time, never met them before, and just being able to sit down and process some of their journey with them, and so encouraged by what they've learned and experienced and grown. I know the God Journey Livestream reaches out to a very narrow slice of what God's doing in the earth.
Yeah.
But when I see people shaped and changed by that and finding themselves into bigger space of loving God, and ended up in Baltimore with near Baltimore with some, and some really hurting people, families that experienced suicide, to some gender issues, to all kinds of diseases and things that are really racking them and challenging their journey. And yet just within 5 minutes of sitting in a room together, people just start opening that stuff up to each other. Just a sense of safety in a room full of strangers, because they didn't know each other, but they came somehow ready to open up their hearts. And then this new framework I've been toying with, I thought, you know, I'm going to share this with them. I think it'll be helpful. And it was hilarious because I, you know, it's kind of a chart thing, which helps if I have a whiteboard or a, but I'm in a home and we got none of that, you know, PowerPoint, got no whiteboard, got no nothing. So I came up with this idea of trying to use some paper plates and writing down some of the key words and drawing the chart out on the floor. And we had a towel there to represent one thing. And then as it got started, this real dog comes in, just wads up the towel into a little bed for itself or whatever. And it was hilarious. And then I realized, you know what? That towel is in the wrong place. So we moved it, and it just was a better understanding of where, because it was representing God's glory in the world.
Yeah.
But the floor was bigger than the towel. So now we got the towel representing the darkness in the world, and the floor, the wider space, God's glory. And so that little switch was fun because the dog helped us get there. Yeah, I think it really connected. I think it gave it lots to discuss about. People keep going, but what about this point and how we go back here? And now I see this in my life differently. And for that, I'm really thrilled. I think, you know, I'm taking on the road to Florida next week and doing some stuff in Bradenton and somewhere else. I don't know where else I'm going, and finally end up in Miami.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm excited by what God's doing in the world. I'm excited in the conversation, the spontaneous stuff. Man, this is always how I wanted to live life. We're not, everything's pre-planned, and God just unwinds thing as you just connect with people and let that go. And so, yeah, coming out of the COVID pandemic and the lack of travel, it's just, I don't know if there's more hunger out there or just a crazier way I live it or a crazy way other people are living it. But even last minute things, one guy doesn't even know I'm in town until he sees on my Facebook page that I'm actually in the town he's in. And so he connected with me, could have grabbed some time, and I had lunch open that day. So I said, well, I want to meet you for lunch. And then we ended up spending a bit of the day together and marvelous conversations and processing. And I'm really encouraged by what God's stirring in the world. I do think the winds have shifted. And I think we're kind of coming to a hold on to your hats and see where this is going to go kind of time. And I don't mean just me. I mean people who've kind of shed some of that religious obligation, performance, exhaustion, and have the space to open up to what God's freshly stirring in their heart. And I see growth happening in rapid ways in people's hearts.
I love that. I've encountered a few of those things as well, Wayne. Literally, I had a conversation with a former pastor, had been a pastor for almost 20 years, now is working in a ministry that provides counseling for pastors. And we were just talking, we were actually talking a little bit about the rise and fall of Mars Hill and just kind of his thoughts on that. And his first, one of his first comments was, Kyle, I am, the longer I've been out of pastoring an institution, the more I am certain that that's not the primary way that God wants to draw people's hearts to him. And that just, I mean, floored me to hear somebody who is still very, very much connected to and wanting to help people who are in full-time ministry and wanting to guard and shepherd their hearts, which I love his heart for that. And he does it very well, but I never would have expected him to say something like that about the more of the institutional setting of the church. It caught me off guard. It surprised me. And this is somebody that I've been doing life with for, oh gosh, 20 years. And it completely caught me off guard. And then, literally I had a couple just signed up for our 20s and 30s something retreat, which we do still have a few spots available. So if anybody is still interested in jumping in on that, please either reach out to me or Wayne and we can make sure to get you on that list.
Yeah. We keep forgetting it to mention it on here, but yeah, that's coming up right away. December 3 through 5. We're going to have some of these conversations in Colorado. If you can come join us and you're in that age group, don't want to hear from the 41-year-old saying, hey, we're almost going to be sneaky in our 20s and 30s. You know, kind of let's have some time there. If you want to do something else with us, we can do something else with a different group of people.
So the fun part is this couple, they got engaged in Torrington watching the eclipse when you and I were there 2017. And then they got married just right outside of where we're having the retreat.
Wow, and they didn't come say hi to us, huh?
I know. What are the odds?
How rude is that?
They're coming back. They're circling back around, and they're going to come and say hi to us now because they're going to be joining us for the retreat. So I'm super excited to get to meet them and to hear more of their story. And
that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to the kind of group Jesus is putting together there for that thing and looking forward. And there's now kind of things stirring around it that people want me to do, either coming in or going out or whatever, in some other places in Colorado nearby. So I don't know how that trip's going to strike. This is Christmas. I got to get home for the festivities with my family, I think, somehow.
We'll have to talk some more about that. I've had a couple other requests, too.
Yeah, so best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
Best thing I heard this week. I was talking with a client that I deeply appreciate, have loved getting to work with this client, and we were having a pretty significant conversation, and I just paused the conversation, and I asked, who do you feel emotionally safe with in your life? And the client responded, you. And I was like, okay, so who else? And so I'm trying to explore that out a little bit more. And I was like, who else? And they made the comment, nobody right now. And it was one of those moments because I literally had a conversation with somebody connected to this situation. And this person feels like their hands are tied, but they found out that they had been praying for a few months now that God would bring somebody into this client's life that would be able to be a source of hope and safety for them in a really challenging season. And that was humbling.
Glad you can be that for people. I wish there were more people like that in the world, you know, emotionally safe people. And I even think about what you said earlier about maybe the institutional kind of arrangement, not the best way to deliver that. And I think oftentimes because it's such a conformity-based environment and people are so performance-based in their own thinking that they're not emotionally safe to struggle with because they're already thinking, well, here's what scripture says you should do instead of getting into the space where they're hurting and helping them find a way to whatever scripture is encouraging us to. It's somehow just like throwing the rule up there is enough for people. And it's not. It makes you an emotionally disastrous person to be around. I found a lot of people over this trip and even conversations, email, whatever, this thing we did about excruciatingly beautiful has just really resonated with people. Man, I had people, and before the podcast was even posted, and I used the term and just watched people kind of gasp and say, that really does, one, give them hope that in the excruciating part of my life, Jesus can take on beauty. Yeah. And I think that's very much an encouragement to people. But there's also that identity of people going, okay, I understand that better now. It's the excruciating things. Because excruciatingly ugly is not fun. No. But finding excruciating beauty, find God in the middle of that is really cool. This kind of goes with that. I heard this from someone who was having a dream that their whole roof was being torn off the house and all the walls were being shredded and this furniture was being blown around the house. And they're sitting there going, my goodness, my whole world is falling apart. And then they heard a voice that said, or maybe things are falling into place.
Ooh.
And I kind of woke up with that in mind. Maybe things, and I think, wow, that sounds Jesus-y to me. You know,
yeah.
We look at things in our life that maybe seem to falling apart, and then we kind of resist them and pull to some darker places trying to resist stuff. And maybe things are falling into place for you. And I certainly think that's true of the world. We see, and we've talked about it on here, all the challenges that our world is facing right now, with the polarization, pandemic, you know, budgetary, on and on and on. Maybe things are falling into place. If you have Jesus's view of where we're going from here, which we don't, we only have today and our fears about tomorrow. He's got tomorrow already in mind and in his hand. And that's why he's kind of assured us best way for you to live might be just in the day. Just there's grace enough for today. There's not grace enough for 2 months from now. There certainly isn't grace enough for your wildest fear extrapolated 6 months from now or a year from now. And I love that. Maybe things aren't falling apart. Maybe they're just falling into place. That touched me.
That's a paradigm shifter. That would shake me up. If I had that dream and since like God was saying something like, that would shake me up. I love that.
Yeah, it disturbs me in a beautiful way. It just really says, wow, that's a different view of what's going on around me. If we really believe that Jesus works in whatever garbage goes on in our world and he's got a better purpose and plan that he's sorting out, then maybe we'd find our way into that peace of mind in him. So you're still following the Mars Hill stuff?
I am.
They've dropped off the planet, haven't they?
I know. They said they were going to do every other week, and then all of a sudden it's gone, and there was nothing this week. I kept waiting for one.
First it was going to be every week, then it was every other week, and then it's been almost a month since the last regular podcast. So
yeah,
it seems like writing the Jake book when I wrote it online for a while. It was going to be one a month, and then it was one every 4 months, and I'm surprised people stayed with the story. I'm about to give up on Mars Hill. I'm going, seriously? You guys, you got all the power of Christianity today behind you, and you can't put this together? I just find it unbelievable. Listen to that, and listen to the end of the Jerry Falwell Liberty University gangster capitalism thing. It's a pretty sad ending. I mean, the whole thing is, it's not just the pool boy scandal that draws attention. It's just how people were treated inside that institution. And you know what? It's like every Christian institution I've known, pretty much. The power issues, the playing down places of pain, because we don't want anybody to see that stuff. So we're just trying to put a good image forward to money and how much people want to control it and be in charge of it and what they're doing to betray other people. I look at that going, oh boy, not that Liberty University, oh, it's such a horrible thing.
Yeah,
it really is. Oh my gosh. That's true in almost every place where humanity gains power and influence, our baser natures come up. Yeah. And yet I will say about my time at was Oral Roberts University, I'm just in the shadow of Liberty when I was in Virginia recently. The amount of stories you hear of God working in the students and the faculty that goes on underneath all the crud going on at the administrative level. And that gives me rejoicing too. I love that God can take really ugly stuff going on and still work his glory in it, around it, and underneath it. It doesn't justify it, because I think we really need to take a really good look at our superintending boards and regents and things that are supposed to be managing that stuff and not letting people get away with crud. But they do. They let them get away with it. And then when it comes to the bills come due, then they are kind of like, well, we didn't know anything was going on. And that part I find sad. I listen to all that going, you know, I've been in and around that kind of thing all my life. Supposed men and women of God living immorally, living dishonestly, living driven by mammon, not Jesus.
Yeah,
I've seen all that. And I don't know. I've seen very few places that didn't fall into that, which is sad.
So I was listening to a podcast and they were just doing a 4-part series on spiritual abuse, and they have been bringing in different guest speakers. And this last time they actually brought in a person who has a background in mental health, is a licensed counselor, and yet they were at Mars Hill from 2009 until the end of Mars Hill. And their perspective, I struggled with it a little bit, honestly, because in their view, they had very formative, very powerful, very growing experiences at Mars Hill, even as the walls are getting torn down and the roof is getting ripped off and all the crud that's being reported on. And this person definitely acknowledged that there was abuse that was taking place in that situation. But they also really hinted at, man, this was very formative. Like, this was a very powerful time in their spiritual journey, that it was very positively impactful for them. It was interesting hearing this person's perspective and seeing them talk about how positive it was and how they were so encouraged to have Mark Driscoll calling these men to be men, but then also, you know, aspiring to tell them, like, hey, how dare you abuse women? Like, don't you dare be abusive. But then on the flip side, like, she's saying how that made her feel safe and how that really was encouraging and impactful to her. And yet on the flip side, at the same time, he is talking about his wife like a porn star. He's abusing his staff. He's like all these things. It's like, so hold on. Like, he's literally not living out what he's talking about. But then it was impactful to you to have a charismatic leader giving you permission to be like, no, it's not okay to be abused by, I don't know. I just was wrestling with that. I didn't know quite how to handle it. It was a weird space.
It is a weird space for a mental health professional or whatever she is to be able to go, oh yeah, there's some abuse there, but it was so much good in it, it didn't matter. Or, well, I don't know what the conclusion is that she was making. Because I'm like, how much abuse is okay? How much is, I love that God is able to do wonderful things in our life through people who are merely taking advantage of us. And I don't want to paint Mark Driscoll even with a, I mean, there's a side of him, obviously, that cared about people and wanted to help him.
Yes.
And there's a darker side that wants to be in charge and in power and doesn't matter who he has to drive over with the bus to get what he wants. And certainly there's the lust for power and influence and all the media stuff they did to embellish that. I always look and say, okay, God does good things in dark places. Let's celebrate God. Maybe celebrate the dark places. It doesn't mean that we don't hold to account, if we care about the body of Christ in the world, that we don't call out things that are destructive to that nature and dishonoring to who Jesus is. There was an article in Atlantic Monthly last month that I thought was interesting. The title is "The Evangelical Church is Breaking Apart. Christians Must Reclaim Jesus from the Church." It said, when the Christian faith is politicized, churches become repositories not of grace, but of grievances. Places where tribal identities are reinforced, where fears are nurtured, and where aggression and nastiness are sacralized. That describes part of Mars Hill, right?
Oh, yeah.
The result is not only wounding the nation, it's having a devastating impact on the Christian faith. That's from Atlantic Monthly. And
That's good.
Yeah, it is good and challenging.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's not mine to do. I'm glad this is all in Jesus' hands. You think things are falling apart? They might be falling together. And that could be a good thing. I'm still reading through Kristen Demez's book about Jesus and John Wayne, how white evangelicals corrupted a faith and fractured a nation. She's quoted a bit in the Atlantic Monthly article as well. Mm-hmm. This page really interested me because 1975, that's when I got married. I got married in 75. Speaking of James Dobson, Focus on the Family, Dobson took it upon himself to articulate the critical difference between men and women. Males and females differ biochemically, anatomically, and emotionally, he asserted. In truth, they are unique in every cell of their bodies. He portrayed the distinction in stark terms. Men like to hunt and fish and hike in the wilderness, while women prefer to stay at home and wait for them. Men played sports as women watched, yawning on the sidelines. But perhaps the most profound difference between men and women, according to Dobson, was the source of their self-esteem. Men derive self-esteem by being respected. Women feel worthy when they are loved. I remember growing up in that and honestly rejecting it, honestly going, so Sarah's supposed to pretend to respect me, so my self-esteem will be solid. And I'm supposed to pretend to love and protect her so that she feels cherished. And that's that, oh gosh. And yet she in the book, she's tracing that to, this is where it all started. The heavy male, and goes on to say this. This is actually quoting the author of that book in the Atlantic Monthly article. She said, over the past half century, evangelicals have tended to depict men and women as opposites. They believe God ordained men to be protectors and filled them with testosterone for this purpose, she said. Women, on the other hand, are seen as nurturers. The fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, and self-control are deemed appropriate feminine virtues. Men, however, are to exhibit boldness, courage, even ruthlessness in order to fulfill their God-appointed role. In this way, the warrior spirit and a kinder, gentler Christianity can go hand in hand. The men get to be creeps. The women have to evidence the fruits of the Spirit. And nobody's screaming like, what's the matter with this?
I wrestled with that book because literally...
Because you like to fish and hunt, right?
Because I do like to fish and hunt, but my wife doesn't stay at home waiting for me either.
Yawning?
No, she doesn't sit there yawning while I'm playing sports. In her intro of the book, Jesus and John Wayne, she lays out this identity, this personification, and I was like, oh man, that is me. Grew up listening to Focus on the Family and Adventures in Odyssey and loves movies like Braveheart and The Patriot and listens to John Eldridge and went to a John Eldridge Wild at Heart boot camp. And I'm listening to this. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, yes, that would definitely depict the culture that I grew up in and that a lot of those early years were in. I wrestled with it. I felt like as I was listening to it, I always had my yuck meter got triggered by things. And now that I go back and listen to some of the stuff, like the Adventures in Odyssey or the Focus on the Family stuff, and I go back and it's like, oh man, nope, that is definitely not where I align anymore. So that was intriguing. I always had like my yuck meter always got pegged by Billy Graham. My grandparents, I mean, they were Billy Graham to the hilt. And I remember sitting down and watching a Billy Graham revival and just thinking, okay, I would not want to be there. I would have no interest in being there and doing that and feeling the pressure of the moment to go down and make some type of experience or whatever. And that's having grown up in that and had multiple times where I felt like I had to be pressured to go up and do something up front on the stage. And man, so it was interesting. Like her history is really intriguing and unpacking that. I love what the quotes that you gave. It challenges me though, because I do think that there are some themes, like at least for me anyway, that, man, I needed to know that I could be untamable. I needed to know that being and living out authentic Christian masculinity wasn't a doormat pansy that had no strength and nothing to offer to the world. Because that's what I had been reduced to.
Interesting term you use, authentic male Christianity. What is that?
I don't know. I think it's person to person. I think it's God. For me anyway, it was God releasing me and working through untangling me from a lot of brokenness. And I remember the first time that I sensed like God saying, Kyle, I want to make you untamable. And that, like, I can't tell you how fast that moved me to tears. Because my entire world was rules and sin management, was adherence to my dad's extremely authoritarian world. There was no strength. I had no voice. I had no power. And so then to have the sense that God was offering, Kyle, I want to make you wild. I want to make you untamable. I want to give you a voice. I want to show you a strength that you have. That is what my heart needed to hear. And yes, like, John Eldridge, he helped cultivate some of that. Now looking back on a lot of that stuff, I was like, no, I don't agree with a lot of that.
Why is that more male than female, though? Why would
it's a not.
Yeah, that's what I get to. I'm all for people who like to fish and hunt, I guess. I went back to one of the homes I stayed in, and there's a bunch of young kids around this pickup truck as we approached the house, and they just bow hunted a deer, and it's laying dead in the back of a pickup, and they're all, oh, yeah, it's so excited. I'm sitting there going, this just makes my heart hurt. It does. This poor thing was alive in the woods 30 minutes ago, and now it got an arrow through its whatever and suffered into a despicable death. And I know people enjoy that. It's not like I don't say, okay, you can enjoy that, but I'm sitting there going, I feel bad for the deer. And I know there's too many deer. I know they need to be hunted. I know whatever, and they're going to eat the meat, so it's all good, all the ways that can be good, but I just think women could enjoy that too. If you want to go shoot a deer, go shoot a deer.
They do. I know a lot of women that that's something they really enjoy.
I guess that's what I get from this. It's not that we can't be in our individuality, whatever God's called us to be. It's that we say, this is what men are. And I know men are bigger, men have more strength. So if Sarah and I get in a rough situation, I'm going to look to protect her. I am. I'm just going to do that just because, not she's a woman, but because she's not as strong, she's lighter, there's more that could happen to her. She's more vulnerable in the world than I would be if there's some kind of danger going on. Not a masculine female thing, just a, I'm bigger, you're smaller, I'm gonna help you get you through. There's never a time when I'm in public with Sarah when I'm not just watching out for her. I'm watching everything going on around. And I think most guys do it, not because I need to be the protector and I come home and Sarah gives me all this respect. I've heard this in marriage seminars back in the day when even if you've got to pretend, let the guy think you respect him. You know, he feeds off your respect. Like he's got this fragile little ego and you just got to keep feeding it, feeding it, feeding it. And your wife, she just, all she wants is love. And then the whole idea that the softer virtues of the fruits of the spirit are feminine virtues and the ruthlessness and cunning of man is a, and that's where I, unfortunately, too many of my conservative friends live in that world right now. The males being dominant politically and dominant this, and we're going to take back that, and we're going to do, and it's, I mean, I hate to say it's incredibly ungodly, but you know what? It's incredibly ungodly. And so, to think that started in 75, so overt, this is the first time that that kind of thing, and that's what's filtered through our culture a lot. In media, other ways, not just Christian, but not, and I think that's part of when we talked about a few weeks ago, the whole masculinity, femininity thing, and people who were schooled, like if you were the idea, you growing up that men are mamby-pamby Christians, they just follow along with everything. Yeah, I can understand why being tough is definitely, yeah, I'm going to move that way. But I was never raised in it. I think it's tough to live by the fruits of the Spirit. I think it's tough to not be in control of your environment. It's harder on me when I travel to not be in control of anything. I'm just going along, loving, incarnating as best I can the things Jesus is doing in my life to love the people around me. And it's harder than if I just am the speaker guy from out of town, just take charge. This is what we're doing. That's what we're doing. This is what we're doing. And I'm doing that. And then I'm going back to my hotel room. I'm going to sit there and stare at my wall for a while, watch sports, pretending I'm meeting with Jesus so I can come out later and be more holy all over again. And I look at all that stuff and go, I don't know how we got here, but it's so incredibly inauthentic. I do think a marriage needs mutual respect and mutual love. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is to grow in that together. The person you live with all the time, how do I negotiate a life with them that's mutual love, respect, caring, and sharing, and growing, and losing our selfishness to be more selfless in our life with each other? I think all that's awesome. What's put in such stark male, female, masculine, feminine terminology, that's where it loses me.
You know, I hear where you're landing as well, Wayne, and I guess I'm still wrestling through that. You know, for me, I don't think it's, for example, the book Love and Respect, I have such a deep disdain for that book, I can't even begin to tell you. And largely, and I know people were positively impacted by it or whatever, but largely, because I saw that book be taken and used as a justification for abuse and a justification for authoritarianism and get in line, woman, like you must submit to me, like all these things. And it was like, man, that is that healthy? Like, is that a healthy lifestyle? For Jess and I love to be out in the outdoors. So does my wife. She is a phenomenal rock climber. She's an amazing mountaineer. She does not like hunting. She does not like fishing. And so, you know, those parts are true to me, but we both love to adventure together. We also both love culture and foodie and dancing. And one of the really big challenges is that assigning or being saying this is specifically male, or like you said, this is that the fruits of the spirit are specifically female. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, hold on a second. I completely resonate with that. And yet I think that there are some things too, that it's like just giving people permission to say, be who God created you to be and take the time to figure out what that is. I needed to be able to to live adventure. I needed to be able to take risks. I needed to be able to find out that I could have a voice again, because that had been taken from me. For my journey in my relationship with Christ and becoming more of a man for my wife and for my daughter. And it sounds like I'm going to be a girl dad. That's what God has blessed me with. Our other child is going to be a daughter as well. So how do I encourage that? How do I love that into the fullness and the totality of who God's created that to be? So if I have one daughter who wants to do martial arts and loves hunting and wants to be in the outdoors, and then I've got another daughter who wants to enjoy painting and doing her nails and fashion, is any one any more feminine or less feminine than the other? No. Be who you are. Be who God's created you to be. Allow yourself the permission to explore the identity that God's created you in.
Most Christian environments haven't allowed that, though. We've pretty much set the expectations.
You're right.
And that to me is the issue. This Scott Dudley was quoted in this Atlantic Monthly article. However, I also know that the early Christians transformed the Roman Empire not by demanding, but by loving. Not by angrily shouting about their rights in the public square, but by serving even the people who persecuted them, which is why Christianity grew so quickly and took over the empire. I also know that once Christians gained political power under Constantine, that beautiful, loving, sacrificing, giving, transforming church became the angry, persecuting, killing church.
Yeah.
And he ends that by saying, we have forgotten the cross.
Yeah.
Jesus' power is so different from the way we see it. It's not about trying to, like we started this podcast, it's not about trying to control everything so it happens the way I want and I get angry when it doesn't. But being able to be in the situations we're in and be redemptive, to see what God's calling out of my heart to be, believe me, I don't think you can live tamed in this age, male or female. I just don't think you'll survive, because the people that are trying to tame us are trying to use us.
Yeah.
That's why I so react to people talking about God using me, because I just don't think God's a user. I think God wants us to walk with him, to express his redemption in the world, and to bring that light and glory into just the way we live, where we live, consistent with the personality he's given me and the passions I have, when they're redemptive, not when they're self-serving and exploitive of other people and all that stuff, but when they're really inside of living loved, no longer having to do what I do for Wayne's benefit at other people's cost, but now being able to live in the world to other people's benefit at my cost, and lay down my life when God calls me to and invites me to. Not everyone, every time, everywhere, but where I'm asked to, where it is, what it means to follow him, and to express these. I mean, I've seen the trajectory of my journey the last 26 years, finding my space in that love, joy, peace, kindness, patience. I see Jesus taking shape, some of those things in my heart that are not there naturally, and not that I train myself to do, but also find living near toxic masculine people who see that as weak and therefore want to exploit it, whether they're going to lie about you or gossip or do things behind your back because they know you won't, so they get a free rein there. It's hard to live inside the reality of God in the world, especially if you're not at rest in his love.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that makes it work for me is, okay, God, you got to take care of that. Things are falling, maybe falling apart for them. So they're angry and they're doing things that make no sense. But I know that things are falling together in my heart and life. And there's nothing circumstantially that can happen. And I've been tested on this recently that can rob that from my heart. Even when other people are acting purely, and I'm going to use the word demonically around me, because I think that fits. I don't think that means they're possessed by demons. I simply mean, like Jesus said to the Pharisees, you say you're of your father Abraham, but you're of your father the devil, because he lies and you lie too. And what he's really saying is you're cooperating with the work of darkness.
Yeah.
When you give into that posture of going to get my rights, lie, deceive, push, pull, demand, fight, that's not a masculine Jesus-y way to live in the world.
No.
I think the fruits of the Spirit apply to all of us, male and female. And I also think they're impossible to produce on our own. And they will not come out of the frustrated life trying to make your world the way you want it to be. I think that's the opposite spirit of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And so if that's what's motivating you, your paranoia, your fear, whatever, then I think you need to stop, take a gut check and say, how would I live, Jesus, if I knew you were in control of my heart and life, that I didn't have to fix things to meet my expectations or desires, that I can actually live more open-handedly and open-heartedly to serve and love the people around me? For me to be saying this, I sit here and laugh even though that I'm talking that way, because the Wayne of 25 years ago would not have understood what I just said and would definitely not have subscribed to it.
That's part of moving into that, living in out of the love, rest, and play that he invites us into, right?
Yep.
Because that's, you know, you think about that Jesus had incredible strength and incredible grace and incredible love simultaneously. And the times where his reputation or his character was challenged by dominant, you know, like you've got Roman centurions, you've got Roman governors, you've got
Pharisees, Pilate, Herod.
Yeah. And he could have leveled them if he wanted to. And yet that wasn't his response. His response took a whole nother level of courage and love to say that I don't need to prove that to you. I don't need to prove myself. I don't need to justify my identity to you. I'm secure in the Father in that. That's where I'm starting, is secure in his love and his affirmation of me as his son. And I mean, that takes a whole other level of strength. And I think I'm just starting into that, to learn that. Even 5 years ago, I would have been, well, I'm going to fight this and I'm going to grab hold of this and I'm going to protect my reputation. And it was just even just within the last 2 years where I felt the work that God had been doing in my life was enough to allow me to let go of that and not feel an urgency or a need to do that. Knowing that I'm being lied about and my character is being lied about, but not feeling an urgency to defend it, to counterattack, but just basically having the permission to say, my life will live, and who God's created me to be and the impact that I have in the world, it's hopefully it continues on, and we'll see what happens in the end.
Yeah, you're never defined by what other people say about you, even when they're lying.
Yeah.
The grace to be in the midst of situations in life, not having to defend yourself, is a powerful thing. It has implications. I mean, people who lie then end up in darker places until the consequences overwhelm them.
Yeah.
And they decide, maybe I need to find something truer.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.